Then thirdly, there is the organic view, characteristic of China. In this, there is no real thought of there being a divine creator or a divine actor behind the world, but rather the world is thought of as being self-moving and self-creating. The word for nature in Chinese means what is of itself so. When in the West a child asks its mother, "Who made me?" and she replies, "Darling, God made you," and the child asks, "But who made God?" she has to say, "Nobody made God." And that is a great puzzle to the child, who thinks of the world as a construct. And it may be explained to the child, if you like, that God makes himself. He exists of himself because he is existence. To put it in more theological language, he has the attribute called aseity, from the Latin arse, by himself. Perhaps some kind of enfant terrible would ask the question, well, if that's true of God, why couldn't it be true of the world in the first place? Why did you have to make that additional step? If he did so, he would be thinking more or less in the Chinese way, which does not think of the world either as an artifact of some maker or as a mask or appearance worn by some sort of deeper reality. He doesn't, in other words, have a two-level view of nature as an appearance underneath which there is something else to explain it. He sees it all rather as self-evident, as being something which regulates itself and indeed orders itself. There is a certain sense, you see, in which the Chinese view is fundamentally, or you could almost call it anarchical, or if you don't like that word, you could call it democratic. A world which is self-governing, not even through a president, but self-governing in every way, a great and colossal anarchism, which moves itself in the same way as you and I move our fingers without directing them in the sense that we know exactly what we're doing and how we move them. We don't. Now, I've said that the Western view is probably what made it possible for us to develop our highly advanced technology by thinking about the world as a construct. We could think about the laws or principles or plans or regularities upon which it was based. We could think, for example, of the calculus, of number, as the basic characteristic of the law upon which nature is based. By doing that, we caught on to the idea of thinking of all things as reducible to atoms, to parts, to bits. And then by thinking of bits, we found that we could measure the world very accurately, describe its regularities very accurately. And that gave us an astonishing degree of control over it. But this is a point of view which is successful to a certain degree. It goes well up to a certain level, after which it begins to develop complications. For one thing, you could say it has complications which are psychological on the one hand and practical and technical on another. From the psychological point of view, Its complication is that when it becomes commonsensical to us to look at the world as a mechanism, we begin as humans, as people capable of feeling and love, to feel the external world rather alien to us. Yes, it's a machine. It's a great, big, automatic, mechanical arrangement, which, in essence, is simply stupid energy. We thereupon feel that it has nothing in common with ourselves, and perhaps even though we try to give the same sort of account of ourselves and try to reduce our brains and emotions to some kind of neurological computer mechanism, that makes us, in a way, hate ourselves. For as soon as we start thinking of ourselves as automata, we begin ethically and psychologically treating ourselves as automata. We lose respect for ourselves. And thereupon feel that what is central to us, the feeling center, the person, is trapped in a cosmos that is a mechanical nightmare, foreign and strange. We can see ourselves as a kind of ghastly accident. And I don't wonder that this engenders certain kinds of suicidal tendencies in our culture. So much for the psychological point of view. From the technical point of view, the analogy of nature with mechanism develops its own disadvantages after a certain point. That is to say, the disadvantage of trying to manage the physical universe as if it were indeed an assemblage of separate parts, or separable parts. The first sort of person to notice this mistake would be the extreme surgical or medical specialist who knows, for example, all about hearts or about stomachs, but very little about brains or lungs or glands, and who treats one organ at a time and becomes unaware of the imbalances inflicted upon other organs by what he's done to the organ in which he specializes. Also, in the same way, the specialist always tends to see the units of nature and to be unaware of their connections or relationships, which are, after all, inseparable relationships with all the other parts. There is, you might say, also another technical disadvantage, again, which develops only in the course of time, to this particular mechanical analogy. And that is that when you begin to rely more and more upon minute and careful description of the world for dealing with it, and that, of course, involves the reduction of the world to describable units, the world then becomes terribly complicated. And it becomes increasingly difficult to keep track of all the minute units that you've described. Hence the difficulty of specialists in the various sciences communicating with each other, and the difficulty of the scientific specialist in communicating with the layman. The whole thing becomes much too complicated to manage. And this then means that